Issues, Etc. 24, Hour 8, starts now.
Ideas do have consequences, and of course, when we're talking about the Lutheran Reformation, it's an idea, a complex of ideas that have tremendous consequences. Some have claimed that one of the consequences of the Lutheran Reformation, maybe from the pen of Martin Luther himself, was in time the anti-Semitism that eventually blossomed into Nazism and other forms of fascism in Western Europe. Is that true? Can we lay Nazism, anti-Semitism, fascism at the door of the 16th century reformer Martin Luther? It's often asserted that Luther was himself anti-Semitic and that Lutheranism in some form or another led to Nazism. We're going to take up that myth about Lutheranism for the next hour of Issues, Etc. 24, live this Friday evening, November the 14th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. I invite your questions and your comments. I know many people have questions about this particular myth regarding Lutheranism, and we're willing to answer all of them in the next hour with Dr. Uwe Simonetto. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio with your questions or comments. Talkback@issuesetc.org. Talkback@issuesetc.org. You can send your questions via Twitter @issuesetc or leave them at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. Uwe Simonetto is a regular guest. He's an international journalist, executive director of the Center for Lutheran Theology and Public Life based in Capistrano Beach, California, and author of the book The Fabricated Luther, Refuting Nazi Connections and Modern Myths. Uwe, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you, Todd.
Did the Nazis themselves, at the time of their zenith in Western Europe, did they themselves claim Luther as one of their influences in their rabid anti-Semitism?
Yes, they did. But so did Ivan Berggrav, the Bishop of Oslo, was resistant against Hitler, claimed Luther for his resistance against Hitler. Here's one thing. The guy who rediscovered Luther's anti-Jewish statements, we'll get to that, the difference between anti-Jewish and anti-Semitic, was a guy by the name of Alfred Rosenberg, who was the Nazis' chief propagandist and one of the most rabid anti-Semites ever. Alfred Rosenberg was an atheist. So, I mean, he is an atheist who claims Luther for his false beliefs, and at the same time, a faithful Lutheran like the Bishop of Oslo, who resisted Hitler very, very heroically, claimed Luther for the resistance against the Nazis.
So let's talk about the difference that you wanted to draw there between anti-Jewish and anti-Semitic. Most people wouldn't see a difference at all. How would you draw the distinction, Uwe?
Okay, what is anti-Semitism? It's racism, right? I mean, we're talking about Semites. Semites are a race, so therefore anti-Semites are people who are against one particular race, namely the Semites. Okay. Racism is a concept that didn't even exist in the 16th century. Racism, like extreme nationalism or nationalism as a concept, didn't show up until the Enlightenment, well than a century later. So that's the first thing. It is not racism. Luther never opposed the Jewish, quote, race, because he's never actually seen them as a race. He said, if I had been a Jew and had seen doors and blockheads governed and teach the Christian faith, I would sooner have become a hawk than a Christian. So Luther had nothing against the Jewish people. There wasn't such a concept. By the way, if I may draw back, go a little further back, in those days, in the German castles, you had blacks from Africa, not as servants, not as slaves, but they were princes, and they were guests, and all permanently living in these castles. There was the idea of a quote inferior unquote race simply did not exist in the 16th century. What we did have is a religious anti-Jewish sentiment, and there we must agree that Luther late in life, that was quite contrary to what he said earlier in the Reformation, made some horrendously awful statements about the Jews. But it was always based on their religion. And it is also clear why he made them. First of all, at the time he developed these anti-Jewish sentiments, he also made equally horrible statements, not only about Roman Catholics, but also about Lutherans, because he, at that point, was so disappointed that he thought the Reformation hadn't taken a grip of the German population. And so he thought that Jews were rejecting Christ, and that was offensive. But he also thought that Christians hadn't understood the gospel either. And so he made equally awful statements, which are hardly ever quoted. That is one reason. The other reason is that for centuries, there had been a myth in Europe that Jews were kidnapping Christian children as a blood offering. This has been going on for centuries before that, and it came around again during the Reformation era. 100 years before Luther, a Jewish convert to Christianity by the name of Johannes Pfefferkorn made the same claim and made equally horrible anti-Jewish statements. He became a Dominican in the end. That is a fact that Luther actually accepted these rumors, which were false. As far as we know, they were false. I don't think there were any evidence that Jews had kidnapped Christian children for blood sacrifice. But it was a common superstition. Now, another thing has to be said here, Todd, and that is that while Luther made these statements as an old man, and actually a dying man in the end, dying very painfully, as you know, his statements were then already opposed by famous Lutherans like Andreas Osiander, a theologian in Nuremberg, an Old Testament scholar. And even Melanchthon was horrified by what Luther said. And then furthermore, after Luther's death, all these anti-Jewish statements were so cast aside. I mean, for centuries, the Lutheran Church then went on to preach the gospel without any reference to anti-Jewish sentiments by Luther.
So let's kind of rewind the clock on Luther just a little bit, because you said these more offensive statements were made late in life by Luther for a number of reasons. He believed false rumors about the Jews. He had a fundamental hostility towards those religious sentiments that rejected the gospel. So whether it was among the German people or whether it was among the Jews there in Germany, their religious sentiments that got in the way of the gospel were abhorrent to him. But early in his career, he is very ironic toward the Jewish people, very hopeful that they could be converted to the gospel now that it had been rediscovered. Talk about that, if you would, Uwe.
Immensely so. He not only that, he conducted correspondences with rabbis. He, as I said, I quoted to you earlier, if I had been a Jew and had seen such dolts and blockheads govern and teach the Christian faith, I would sooner have become a hawk than a Christian. And then he also said, we should remember that we are meaning the Germans, I mean the Christians, we are but Gentiles, where the Jews are in the lineage of Christ. I mean, this has been an ongoing and a wonderful, they're wonderful statements. I mean, I have pages and pages and pages of these statements, which really defines the young and agile and intellectually prolific Martin Luther that we revere. Then a number of other things happened since then, primarily his disappointment, which came sort of in the 1540s, that he thought the Reformation and his proclamation of the true gospel had not caught on. And it was then, of course, don't forget, we were living in a Christian nation. Germany was part of the Holy Roman Empire of a Christian nation, of a German nation. So Germany was part of the Holy Roman Empire, was by definition Christian, and the rejection or the denial of Christ was, of course, offensive. And then Luther said in the beginning, well, the reason why it's why these false ideas still persist is because Christianity had been insufficiently explained to the Jews and others around here. And if only we, now that I've cleaned up the gospel for you guys, why don't you accept it? This is the background. But we were not living then in 21st century America, which rejects now officially being a Christian nation, even though most Americans are Christians. But we were in a Christian nation where Christianity was the state religion and was everybody's religion, except for those who didn't, who rejected belief in Christianity. And there he even had excuses for those Jews, because he said, this was badly, it's our fault, Christianity's fault, we didn't explain it well enough.
There were also anti-blasphemy laws. This is connected with the notion of being a Christian Christian nation. There were laws against public blasphemy against the Christian faith, and Luther felt late in his life that the Jews were violating these laws.
Well, yes, and by the way, these blasphemy laws to some extent still exist. I mean, except that that the denial of Christ is no longer considered a blasphemy, but there are still blasphemies in Europe, blasphemy laws in Europe. Yes, he was within the legal parameters of his time. Todd, I want to get to another very important aspect here, and that is language. I'm a journalist, after all, and this is these are my tools. 16th century Germany was not post-Victorian America. It was not a country of political correctness. By the way, the same applies to the 17th century America. Baptist Puritan preachers were very saucy in their sermons, if you study those. When Luther spoke, he let it rip. And that was actually acceptable. It wasn't judged in a sense the way that nowadays we judge somebody if we use the quote false term for, say, a homosexual. It wasn't the land. Germany was never the land of understatement, as Britain was. It's always, and Saxony in particular, is a land of overstatement. So he overstated his case and did it beautifully in many other instances. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the richness of Luther speak in our proclamation. You see, as Lutherans, that is another aspect that has to be considered here. That you didn't weigh things as precisely as people do nowadays.
So let's talk a little bit about how it is that people tried to make a connection between Luther's ideas, not only between Luther's ideas and the anti-Semitism of Nazism, but Luther's ideas and fascism, the rise of fascism in Western Europe. How do people try and make that case?
I think it is. I must now say, because it's coming up again as we are approaching the quincentenary of the Reformation, I now say it's pure hatred. You have to pin hatred against somebody, and by knocking Lutherans, you also knock Germans, and so it's all that. What has happened is this. The Lutheran princes had probably been, until the late 19th century, had the most open courts for Jews and other minorities. Jews were ennobled left, right, and center. The princes in Germany dictated that Jewish rabbis had to wear the same vestments as Lutheran pastors, namely the black robes and the preaching caps, not in order to make life difficult for the rabbis, but quite to the contrary, to put them on an even level with Lutheran pastors and state church people. It didn't come up until the chaplain of the kings of Prussia, the emperor of Germany, who was a reformed theologian, suddenly rediscovered and dug up these horrible texts by Martin Luther. Until then, it's very, very hard to find in any sermons of that era, leading up to the late 19th century, any reference to Luther's so-called anti-Semitism. And it's only when the Nazis, when Germany collapsed after World War II and everything was World War I, that the Nazis, this guy Rosenberg in particular, picked up this stuff, and then developed a propaganda theory out of which a methodology, out of which you could do with any text, if you will. You can always twist and turn statements into fitting your ideology, whatever you are, communist or Nazi or whatever. And it came like that. Just to double back, in World War I, the Jews had a higher casualty rate and also, percentage-wise, a higher rate of blue max decorations. That was the Pour le Mérite, the highest-ranking decoration you could get in the Imperial Army in Germany, than anybody else. There were more Jews fighting for Germany, volunteering for Germany, showing more bravery than other denominations, and were totally integrated. That was up until 1918, by which time there were no Nazis around. There were no fascists around, certainly not in Germany. So this Luther-Hitler link is totally artificial and is artificially dug up by somebody who wants to, somebody who is totally ahistorical, is either ahistorical or hateful, and wants to pin the Nazi thing not only on a 16th century sage, but actually on an entire nation, an entire denominational group. And then, of course, they never quite explained why it is that a much more Lutheran part of the world, namely Scandinavia, at the time, did not produce a Hitler, was not anti-Semitic. Germany is half Catholic. And none of the Nazis, the leading Nazis, Hitler, Himmler, and all these clowns, were baptized Lutherans. They had been baptized in Catholic churches. So it is a totally artificial thing. But you get it, and it's terrible scholarship on the part of those people who are now writing doctoral dissertations about this thing.
How would you correct the record when it comes to Lutheran resistance against both Nazism and fascism in general? It's often just simply said kind of a gloss of history, saying, well, Lutherans were quietists, they were pacifists, and they didn't resist the encroachment of Nazism, or when Nazism held sway, they didn't resist. How would you correct the record there?
Well, first of all, you can point to quite a number of people who Lutherans, famous Lutherans, whether it was Bonhoeffer or Hermann Sasse or others, who did resist. Otherwise, furthermore, you can point at Scandinavians, especially Norwegian Lutherans, who were united. You know, the entire Lutheran clergy in Norway was united in their resistance, based on their Lutheran theology. Burggraf made that very clear. You can also show more Roman Catholic priests died in concentration camps than Lutheran pastors, but there was a reason for that. Roman Catholics, that's one advantage of celibacy. Roman Catholic priests, of course, only had one life to lose, whereas Lutheran pastors had a family to worry about, and so therefore, if they were in the resistance, they were not even normally sent to concentration camps, although quite a number did go, but they were sent to fight in the front lines ahead of the ongoing fighting forces. So you had an enormously high casualty rate among Lutheran pastors drafted into the regular Wehrmacht. There are points here. You have, furthermore, to look at the sheer numbers. The Protestant clergy in Germany numbered some 18,000 men. I'm talking about the state-related Protestant churches. More than half of those were Lutherans, pure Lutherans. Of these Protestant clergymen, 6,000 were in the so-called German Christian movement, which was the pro-Nazi movement. And I have experienced these clowns as a child, especially one in particular who terrorized me and terrorized my family. They were horrible. But you also had 6,000 who were in the confessing church movement with Bonhoeffer and others. And then there were 6,000, the usual guys all the way in between, who don't have the guts to express any opinion in a dangerous situation. It is also, that is a very, very false thing to just excuse a Lutheran theology, accuse them of being responsible for Hitler. Then again, if you look at the theology of the pro-Nazi Protestants, it wasn't actually a Lutheran theology by any means. It was esoteric nonsense. It did not have the two kingdoms doctrine as we know it and as we've been taught in seminary. None of this. They developed their own ideology, their race-based theology, which is not Lutheran, by any measure, Lutheran theology. There is no way. If you study Luther, you cannot ever claim that any particular race is more in the grace of God or less in the grace of God than another. I mean, this is nonsense.
What really did produce fascism and Nazism? How would you describe that, Uwe?
Well, look, there are many ways. I have my own theory about it, which is the one I explained to Fabricated Luther, which was my doctoral dissertation at Boston University. Fascism and Nazism are an outgrowing, to my mind, of the Enlightenment, and subsequently even more so of the French Revolution, rooted in one particular Reformation movement that Luther fought, and that was these were the Schwärmer, the enthusiasts at the time. So it started there. Out of the Enlightenment and the French Revolution, grew a movement where the man, not God, man was put in the center of all things. Everything was about the me. Everything was about the man. And that, of course, led and was acknowledged to have led by people like Rosenberg, but on the other hand, also by Marx and Engels. This led to the outgrowth of those two radical left-wing movements. To me, National Socialism has not been a conservative movement, but a left-wing extremist movement with a racist bent, all of which are an outgrowth of the French Revolution, especially French Revolution, I would say. And Bonhoeffer said as much, too, and I think this is pretty correct. You can, I don't think anybody has who has actually studied this can honestly argue against this concept.
Dr. Uwe Simonetto is our guest. He's an international journalist and executive director of the Center for Lutheran Theology and Public Life based in Capistrano Beach, California. He's author of the book, The Fabricated Luther, Refuting Nazi Connections and Modern Myths. When we come back a few more minutes with him, talking about the myth regarding Lutheranism that Martin Luther was anti-Semitic and that Lutheranism led to fascism. It's Issues Etc. 24. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Hello, this is Derek from Sedalia, Missouri. Issues Etc. has been, for me, a lighthouse in a perilous sea of dangerous teachings and teachers. These wolves surround many, and had it not been for Issues Etc., I might have been another unknowing victim of pop American Christianity. For the knowledge gained and the protection offered through the expounding of sound doctrine, I am truly grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Derek, for listening in Sedalia, Missouri, and thanks to all of you who have pledged your support so far during Issues Etc. 24, and those who are listening as well. And speaking of thanks to Matt Jamieson. And Matt, how you doing, buddy, in New Jersey? Thanks so much for supporting the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. during Issues Etc. 24. Good to hear from you, Matt.
And thanks to Claire in Killeen, Texas. Is that how you pronounce that?
Killeen? I believe so.
I'm good at pronouncing things, so that doesn't surprise me. It only took me one try to get it right.
Well, if we wanted to know for sure, we'd have to open Wilkins Mike.
Wilkins
Mike, he's a Texas
yeah.
native.
But those folks have donated to Issues Etc. during Issues Etc. 24, and you can too. Give us a call, please, at 877-623-6943. You can make an online secure donation at our website, issuesetc.org. Or if you're listening on demand and you're not listening live, then you want to give us a call here at the office, 618-223-8385. We can take your donation over the telephone, via credit card. Let us know you're sending a check. Let us know you're donating however, and we'll take your pledge during Issues Etc. 24.
Half hour from now, for those of you who made a $100 donation or more to Issues Etc. during Issues Etc. 24, we're going to draw for Dr. Uwe Simonetto's excellent book, The Fabricated Luther, Refuting Nazi Connections and Modern Myths. That's for everybody who makes a donation of $100 or more during Issues Etc. 24. We'll draw for that book in about 30 minutes. And, of course, any size donation during Issues Etc. 24, you'll receive the book, Why I Am a Lutheran, Jesus at the Center. Call and pledge your support now, 877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can call for the on-demand listeners, 618-223-8385. Enjoy more great stimulating conversation from Uwe Simonetto during Issues Etc. 24.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. 24, our live 24-hour broadcast on this Friday evening, November the 14th. We're continuing our conversation with Dr. Uwe Simonetto on myths regarding Lutheranism, that Luther was anti-Semitic, and that Lutheranism led to fascism. How should we regard then, Uwe, these late anti-Jewish statements from Martin Luther? I mean, they're tough to read. They really are. And as you said before, they did prove something of an embarrassment for Luther's colleagues, even his contemporaries there when he wrote them. How should we regard them?
I think we should dismiss all of them as signs of human frailty and human as part of sin. Luther himself has not excused and has never said that he was free of sin. So it was sinful to denounce people like that as a whole, generalized like that. And this was pointed out to him too by people like Osiander and others. It's as simple as that. Yes, we can say it would be nice if the Jews accepted Christ, but we do not condemn them, and we certainly don't go around saying that that the Jews were kidnapping Christian kids for blood sacrifice. So, I mean, we have to dismiss them that as sin, and instead turn to what Luther really had to say and what really were his accomplishments, and that was the purity of the gospel. And that is what we should stress.
Without
denying that he said these things, we cannot deny this. As you said, they are awful to read. There are pages and pages and pages of them.
Oh, let's talk a little bit about the real religious tenor of Nazism. Nazism was hardly Lutheran, much less Christian, or hardly Christian, much less Lutheran. What were the religious ideas that fermented within the Nazi ideal?
Well, there were two ideas. One was sheer atheism. And the other one was spiritualism or spiritism, linked to ancient Germanic religion and nature worship and that sort of thing. It's a very interesting thing that I urge you to read, and anybody who's interested in that. There is a book called Heinrich Himmler. It's the autobiography of the founder and head of the SS. And there you will read that Himmler was actually, by the way, the author's name is Peter Longerich, Longerich, and it's out in English. Peter Longerich is a German historian teaching in London. He made a very, very interesting observation. He found that Himmler himself had said that he hated Christianity the most. Actually, he wanted to destroy the Christians even more than the Jews because Christianity produced a weak human species and not the heroic German type or Germanic type that Himmler himself and Hitler and others wanted for the domination of the world. Fascinating this, because here's something else that plays into that. The mayor of Leipzig, Karl Gerdler, Leipzig being my hometown, is also the town beyond Sebastian Bach, and Karl Gerdler was the civilian leader of the resistance against Hitler and was hanged by the Nazis. When he, before the war, traveled around America or around the world to warn people of Hitler, he deposited in New York a last test political testament in which he said, the Nazis, don't trust the Nazis, don't think that they're going to be a bulwark against Bolshevism because they're Bolsheviks themselves. First thing they're going to do is to kill all the Jews. Then they're going to destroy Christianity. And finally, they're going to destroy capitalism. And there was Karl Gerdler, mayor of Leipzig, who resigned his mayoralty in protest against the Nazi outrages. And Tony was elected, of course, before the Nazis, or appointed before the Nazis, by a magistrate that included the Social Democrats. He himself was a conservative. And he went around and he tried to warn the Americans and the British and the French, and particularly the British, against that, and said, you got to play with us, meaning the Christian conservative opposition against Hitler among the civilians and especially among the military. And he wasn't listened to. He was, in fact, the governor of the Bank of England kicked him out and said, "You claim to be a conservative. How can you claim to be a conservative if you badmouth your own government?" These things have to be remembered. That there is that the folly of misunderstanding the extent of and the philosophy that behind the Nazi movement led to that and led to this to the Holocaust. It's very, very troubling, and unfortunately, it doesn't matter how much decent historical study and scholarship you will have around the world to outline these things. You will still have some clowns to blame Luther for Hitler, and therefore get always idiots in the media who then promote this notion, and we're straight back to square one. When the actual thing is not recognized, namely that Nazism is an outgrowth of socialist thinking, and it is an outgrowth of the French Revolution, and particularly nauseating once a boot. Nobody denies that. But this is how this is the genealogy of Nazism, and not the Reformation in the 16th century.
So Hitler's goal, for his part, was not to return the Jewish nation to kind of a former glory of Luther's day, where Luther might say nasty things about Jews in Germany. His goal was to return the German nation to a pre-Christian paganism. Is that correct?
To a pre-Christian paganism, or a form of Christianity that he believed in some higher being. And you notice how people nowadays talk about higher power. It always reminds me of Hitler when people say, well, I don't believe in God, but I believe in a higher power. He believed in some form of higher power. However, that higher power manifested itself in the veneration of Germany as a superior nation, of the Germans as a superior race, which, of course, is total nonsense, because if you look at the German race, you will find that they are racially very impure. Look at me. I'm German, but my ancestors are Italian, French, Jewish, you name it. And that is pretty general, that, except in some areas where you might have some pure race German. So it's all nonsense. Hitler himself wasn't pure race German or Austrian. It is the religion of the Nazis was deeply anti-Christian, either heathen or atheistic, one or the other. But it was not Christian, and of course those pastors who played along with the Nazis committed a terrible crime. When you read their statements, I find them very loathsome. And I have experienced this as a child. I was when I was evacuated to a parsonage in Saxony, the pastor, who was a German Christian, who had the gold party badge on his vestments when he officiated in his village church, and beat me up by using French terms and by not making Nazi statements or by quoting from the hymns that my grandmother had taught me in the air raid shelters. These people were there, and they were despicable. But that you cannot blame on Luther. You have to blame it on the individual. You can blame Luther for having made these statements, but I think it should rest there. Certainly Luther did not spawn National Socialism so many centuries after his death, when for centuries in between, the Lutheran Church spread around the world, did fantastic work in nations of other races, like, for example, Ethiopia, the Mekane Yesus Church, which is one of the largest Lutheran churches in Africa, or in India or elsewhere. None of which is, of course, is being quoted. And if you then look at the beauty of the Lutheran resistance in Scandinavia at the time, don't look at Scandinavia now, I think that's fallen by the wayside, unfortunately, theologically. But in those days, they were very Orthodox Lutheran Christians. And Ivan Burggraf is the best example for that.
Let's see. Joe in Minnesota asked, would Dr. Simonetto be willing to discuss the relationship between Luther's statements on the Jews and statements about Christians, Jesus, Mary, in the unexpurgated Babylonian Talmud and other writings like the Zohar and the Midrash Rabbah, apparently anti-Christian statements there? What are your thoughts?
Well, I haven't studied those, Joe. I'm sorry about that, but there is, unfortunately, I'm getting this copy now from Germany. I get it all by email every day now as we're approaching the quincentenary of Jewish anti-Christian and anti-Lutheran statements from rabbis, which are as offensive, obviously, as Luther's statements are about the Jews. But I would not say that this represents general Jewish thinking. Unfortunately, in this country, more than anywhere else, you have a lot of Jews who've been led to believe that this is by bad history lessons in high school, that this link existed between Luther and Hitler, but I would not agree with it. And my Jewish friends, and I have plenty of those, have lived in New York after for 40 years, never expressed such ideas, including my rabbinical friends.
With the 25th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall upon us, does this myth about Luther and its connection to anti-Semitism and Nazism, does it persist in Germany?
The myth persists, but the fall of the Berlin Wall 25 years ago is actually a proof of the right Lutheran theology. And if you give me a couple of minutes to just explain this to you, the biggest charge against Luther is not actually the anti-Semitism charge. The biggest, the most powerful claim is that the Lutheran doctrine of the two kingdoms had produced a wimpish bunch of Germans and Lutherans, and it was because of that, a false interpretation of Romans 13, that the Germans had not sufficiently resisted the Nazis. If you now go back in the, first of all, this is nonsense because it is simply not, there's historical evidence for that, but we don't have time now. You can read it in my book. But the interesting part is that in communist East Germany, it was Lutheran pastors and Lutherans who were ultimately the ones who made the fall of the Berlin Wall possible. Because I know this started in 1968 already. There was a movement that started that the churches provided a roof under which opponents of the regime from all points of life could assemble and just assemble. The pastors did not themselves participate in the political debate, at least not from the pulpits. Had this not taken place, the Lutheran churches, the state-related and other Lutheran churches in Germany, were the ones from which these peace marches emanated that ultimately brought down the wall. and they were very courageously pursuing this line. And that is a very, very, very interesting thought here. It is unfortunately in this country not known how far back this goes, simply because there is sort of a strange nationalistic thing. It's only the Americans who are responsible for the fall of the Berlin Wall. The Americans, Reagan and Bush Senior, had a lot to do with it, but it couldn't have happened without the courage of the East Germans who protested against the wall, who jumped up on the wall and brought it down. And these East Germans had their home in Lutheran churches. And if you want to know the exact genesis of this, it started when Walter Ulbricht, the East German party leader and chief of state, ordered the demolition of the Leipzig University Church, which was the most beautiful Gothic church, on what was then called Karl Marx Platz. And that spawned slowly an opposition on that very month, by the way, to the regime, which snowballed into a huge movement that ultimately led to these demonstrations in 1989. It took, therefore, 21 years to develop, but it started there, and it was all basically basically occurred under the roof of Lutheran churches, Lutheran parsonages. It included the self-immolation of a Lutheran pastor in protest against the perversion of East German youth by the Communist Party, etc., etc., etc. There's a long, 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 long list of things that happened, which, because the media here are not simply do not cover thought as well as they should, and foreign affairs as well as they should, or history as well as they should, is all cast aside. It's very tragic because, unfortunately, then, of course, when it was all over, this Christian movement collapsed again in East Germany then, but that we also know from other eras in history and from Scripture.
So finally then, Uwe, as harsh as Luther was in his latter days in writing against the Jews, had Luther seen what the rise of fascism and of Nazism in Germany, how would he, in your opinion, how would he have assessed that? What would he have said about that?
Well, he couldn't even have conceived of anything like that. But had he been around, he would have been like Bonhoeffer. He would have been in the forefront of opposing it from based on the gospel. It is impossible. There is no difference between a Semite and a German or an African or whatever. We are all children of God, and he would have preached this over and over and over again, and would have he would have nailed more than just 95 theses to a church door. I promise you that, because it violates his own concept that any particular race or group of people could be evil and could be as such condemned. I mean, that's condemned and unjust in the eyes of God. Any particular group, simply because they were born in a certain area or their ancestors were born in a certain part of the world. It's impossible. I mean, it's un-Lutheran to the hilt.
Dr. Uwe Simonetto is an international journalist and executive director of the Center for Lutheran Theology and Public Life based in Capistrano Beach, California. He has authored the book, The Fabricated Luther, Refuting Nazi Connections and Modern Myths. Uwe, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Lane Berglund. There's another Lutheran myth we want to take up here during Issues Etc. 24, and that's that Lutherans overemphasize Paul's theology, that Lutherans kind of go with Paul's theology. They don't pay as much attention to what Jesus had to say. It's a very common myth, and we'll see how to respond to it biblically with Dr. Lane Berglund in the next couple hours of Issues Etc. 24.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Issues Etc. is a Christ-centered, cross-focused radio show that features a wide variety of topics, ranging from scripture text studies to hymn studies, current events reports, both churchly and secular, to historical studies. These programs equip the body of Christ to engage more in their local congregations, respond to criticism and misunderstanding of the faith, and articulate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. Most importantly, through all of these things, Issues Etc. proclaims the Word of God in its truth and purity so that the message of Christ and Him crucified for sinners goes out in a clear manner. As a parish pastor, I've been fortunate enough to have a few members who tune into the program, and this has helped them deepen their understanding of what I am preaching and teaching by both filling in the gaps I may have left and driving them to ask me more questions about God's saving work for sinners. Thanks for all you do. This is Jordan McKinley, listening in Bennett, Iowa.
Thanks for your faithfulness, Pastor McKinley in Iowa. As we always say, we just like to provide artillery for the church militant on the front lines. You guys on the front lines, we're sitting here in Collinsville, Illinois. And we also like to say, confessional Lutherans, we've got your back here from Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Jeff Schwartz alongside one Craig Lord Feichtinger. Craig, how you holding up, buddy?
So far, so good. I think I might have went to the coffee a little early, but when you need it, you need it, and I needed a boost. So
I'll tell you, I've learned over the years to put off the coffee as long as you can. I've been trying to get to that till about the 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning mark, and it's helped me the last couple of years. So we'll see how you hold up, and thanks to everybody for holding up and listening during Issues Etc. 24. We know it's not easy for you as well. Again, we'll be here till 10 in the morning on Saturday, November 15th. At issuesetc.org. So if you go to bed tonight, you can tune in tomorrow morning at issuesetc.org. We'll be here all for the next, so we've got eight down. We're about, a third of the way down?
Third of the way through, yeah.
Wow. Eight down.
16 to go.
16 to go, my friend. And thanks so much for everybody who's contributed during Issues Etc. 24.
Hey, thanks to Pat. And she's a great listener to the show, longtime listener, and a longtime donor to Issues Etc. Thank you so much for your support, Pat. And Pat's going to receive Why I Am a Lutheran, Jesus at the Center. That's by Pastor Daniel Preuss, a book that we're giving out for any size donation. And you can receive that as well. Give us a ring here at the studio. Myself or Jeff would be happy to take your pledge. Phone number here, 877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. You can also make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. Click the donate button there. And if you're listening on demand, you're not listening live with us on November 14th and 15th, you're welcome to call us at any time here at the studio, 618-223-8385, and we'll take your pledge, we'll take your support for Issues Etc., and we thank you in advance for supporting Issues Etc. We couldn't do it without folks like you.
And going from Pat in Michigan farther north to Carol in Canada. Carol has just recently joined the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. That's our monthly or annual donor program. You can find out more about that and the benefits of becoming an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron, just click the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses at our homepage, issuesetc.org. That's the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Thanks, Carol, for becoming a new member of that club. Membership benefits for that, if you're thinking about that during Issues Etc. 24, include items like T-shirts, books, broadcast transcripts, and advertising for your confessional Lutheran congregation. So thanks, Carol, in Canada, for joining the Issues Etc. Reformation Club, and congratulations as well. Carol receives as the winner of the book, The Fabricated Luther, Refuting Nazi Connections and Modernness by Uwe Simonetto. And thanks so much. And again, next hour, the book, or next 2 hours from now, we'll draw for the book Reading the Bible with Understanding by our guest in the next 2 hours, Dr. Lane Berglund. He'll be on with Pastor Wilkin to talk about myths about Lutheranism. Lutherans overemphasize Pauline theology. You've heard that one. A lot of people will say, well, we prefer Jesus' teaching and Lutherans prefer Paul's teachings. We'll have Dr. Lane Berglund, author of the book Reading the Bible with Understanding, debunk that myth, coming up here shortly on Issues Etc. 24. And in 2 hours from now, anybody who makes a donation of $100 or more during Issues Etc. 24 will be in the drawing to win that book, Reading the Bible with Understanding. 877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943, on demand, 618-223-8385, online, issuesetc.org.